the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jim Poplava. We've all heard about wealth. Forbes publishes an annual survey of America's richest Americans. And we have more millionaires and billionaires than any other country in the world. In fact, according to CNBC, the United States has almost 16 million millionaires. But why is it, as wealthy as we are, that wealth does not last beyond two or three generations? Joining us on the program is Paul Horn, a certified financial planner from PFS Group. Paul, it was interesting. We did an interview a while back with a firm that works with wealthy families and tries to educate them and help them pass on wealth to the succeeding generations, because I think I was reading somewhere that by the time we got to the third generation, there wasn't any Astors that were worth millions of dollars. So why is it important for wealthy people to talk with their family members about money? Because I can remember when I got in this business, especially in the early 80s, the World War II generation was very quiet about their wealth. In fact, many of their beneficiaries didn't know that mom and dad was wealthy as they were until they got their inheritance. Why do you think it's important to talk about money?
Yeah, you bring up a very good point there, Jim. The great generation there, they're taught the value of money, but they're taught also not to talk about money. And with them not communicating those same values to their kids, unfortunately, they don't develop those same values. Based on a recent survey, what we saw is after the first parents passed, the first generation typically lost 70% of the family wealth. Only 30% of that went on to the second generation. And within the second generation, 90% of those ran out of money. So that means out of all the millionaires, money making it past their grandkids only lasts about 10% of the time.
Is there any studies that say why this happens? I mean, do they just spend the money, make poor investments? Why, let's say by the time it gets down to the second generation, 90% of that wealth is gone? Are there any statistics as to why this happens?
Yeah, it's interesting. And what most people might think of being estate taxes or investment performance actually count for the smallest reason for failure. 60% of the failures is just breakdown to communication and trust within the family. So the heirs aren't being taught the same values or being spoken to about how to manage the wealth. Then another 25% comes from just what I talked about, because the heirs are not prepared. Only 15% of the failures are due to other circumstances like taxes, poor investment performance, things like that.
So it's talking, it's education, because you would think somebody that has a lot of wealth, that their children would probably be well educated. They would go to the best schools. And somewhere down the line, you think that, you know, through that education, they would learn the value of money, the importance of investing, how to invest, or how to evaluate an advisor. So why do you think that doesn't happen? Because you would assume a wealthy family has well-educated children.
Yeah, the children are well-educated, going to the best schools. And no matter what your viewpoint is on the current state of education here in the U.S., I think most of us can agree that the education system doesn't really properly train kids to be prepared to handle finances or handle money. And so really it is the parents' responsibility to do two parts. One is to educate them the proper behaviors to manage the wealth, but they also need to help instill the right values for their kids.
So when you talk about right values, are you talking about the importance of savings, the importance of living within your means, the importance of managing money well? As you said, you can go to school, maybe you learn a trade, you become a lawyer, you become a doctor, but then there's this money that you inherit eventually. You also need to know how to make good investment choices.
When we talk about values, Jim, you are correct. There's many different types of values within the finances. What we've seen with another study is trying to communicate to their kids. We've seen that 77% of the wealthy again defined as $1 million or more in assets, want to speak to their kids. Only 68% of them believe it's their responsibility to speak to their kids. So while there's the majority of them that want to and believe it's their responsibility, less than one third have actually spoken to their kids about money and preparing them.
Why do you think there's a reluctance to do that? Is it just that they don't want the kids to know the extent of their wealth, or they're afraid that maybe this may alter how their children develop? Because we've heard about what we so-called trust fund kids, where you take large fortunes in the United States, where basically what they inherit, they don't have to work. So they live a life of idleness and they're not very productive.
Yeah, I think part of the problem here, Jim, is when we talk about communication, going back to what we said before, the great generation was taught not to talk about money. So for them to have that conversation, it goes against how they were raised. So it's a change in mindset that has to take place and has to be an honesty. And when we talk about communicating with kids, we're not talking about spilling the beans, because there's many different ways to communicate. One good example is we had talked with one of our clients about wanting to communicate to his kids. So all he simply did when his kids were both college age, they were home over Christmas, he showed them an Excel spreadsheet. He said, this is how much we're worth. You're getting half. Okay? Okay. And that was the extent of the conversation. And that wasn't very valuable because it doesn't involve the kids. So it doesn't help teach them any of the values about how to manage the money. It just lets them know that they're getting something when he passes and they're not involved in the process at all. Then on the flip side, you can have a parent that gives too much information. Hey, honey, we have all these properties. They're worth X, Y, Z. This is how much we make each year. Your kids don't need to know all the fine details. But again, what we're trying to do is position them to have an idea for where you're at now and where you want the family to go in the future.
Yeah, one of the things that we have seen over, I would say, decades, and it's probably more prominent now, is that when the final spouse passes away, the children come in and, of course, they're made aware that they're going to inherit X amount of dollars. It's amazing how quickly some of that money is dissipated in terms of taking trips, buying new homes, buying new cars, luxury items. In other words, instead of saying, you know, I want to invest this, this inheritance is really going to make a difference in my own retirement, they go through and they spend a lot of money. And I wonder if this is probably one of the reasons, because that value of hard work that took to save that money, earn that money, is not imparted to the children, because we see wealth dissipated very quickly sometimes upon the passing of the last spouse.
I would definitely agree with you on that, Jim. Unfortunately, the values aren't being passed on to the heirs, so they are not managing the wealth appropriately. Part of the problem that comes from this is 80% of the millionaires today in the US are first generation. That means they created their wealth. Out of all the millionaires out there, only 20% are native to wealth, meaning they were born into it. So what you have here is you have this dichotomy where most of the wealthy created their own wealth. So they had to develop over time the right values, the right attitudes, the discipline to both grow and manage the wealth. So what you have a problem here, though, is the second generation, those that are native to the wealth, they grow up in a very different culture, very different environment. They grew up in different schools, different neighborhoods. And so they learn different cultures. So when you grow up with money, you have a different viewpoint of what the dollar's worth and what lifestyle to live versus someone that grew up without money and came into money through wealth creation.
You know, it's amazing, because if you take some of the big fortunes we have in this country, you think of Steve Jobs, or you think of Larry Ellison of Oracle, multi-billionaires, but they came from common backgrounds. They lived in ordinary homes, middle-class homes. In fact, both of them were adopted. And I'm trying to think who the third fortune was, but there were three individuals that are multi-billionaires, Jobs and Ellison being two that I can recall, and they were adopted. And they grew up very poor. In fact, a lot of the billionaires you see out there today, I don't care if it's a George Soros or some of these other billionaires that are well known, they came from, I would say, humbler backgrounds. So there is this difficulty. If you came from a humble background, you make the wealth, your hard work, your children are raised in a different lifestyle. They grow up in a different neighborhood, a more affluent neighborhood. They go to more affluent schools. They have cars where other people don't have cars. So when you grow up around this wealth, not having had to work or earn for it, don't you think that creates a divide between, let's say, the founder or the parent that created the wealth and the child that inherits the wealth?
Yeah, absolutely, Jim. When we talk about the second generation that's growing up in the wealth, they have a very different viewpoint. They see things through a different lens. So for parents, it's important to communicate with their kids in a manner that's going to help teach the kids self-reliance, not relying on the parents' monies, and developing certain attitudes to help encourage them to go out and create their own wealth. Because when we talk about wealth creation for parents, what we want to do is encourage our kids to create their own wealth. And what we have seen for those families that have passed the 10% down over the generations, one of the things that they push their kids for the biggest is wealth creation. What we've seen that in many different forms, a great example of one of our own clients was we had a client that helped pay for college for the kid. Kid graduated college with no debt. The kid was able to choose which school they went to, what their degree was. So they were able to pursue their passions. And after they graduated, the parent gave them some money for a down payment on a condo. So they were able to buy their first property. The parent bought them a vehicle and the parent said, great job. Best of luck. Make it work. And over the time, they didn't just set their kid up for failure. They set them up in a good spot to begin with because they had the down payment. They had a car that was paid for and they worked with the kid, teaching them how to budget, teaching them how to save, teaching them how to invest. And really a fourth bucket, which is very important, which is how to give. Because with wealthy individuals, charitable work is very common. Normally, we talk about a three bucket approach for most individuals, where it's save, invest, spend. With the more higher affluence, it's important to have that fourth bucket, which is for gifting, to teach the kids how to be good stewards of the money.
So part of this example, the parents, and I can think of one client that did the same. He was a doctor. He was put through medical school and his father paid for it. So unlike many doctors that graduate from medical school with, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars of debt, he was able to leave medical school, start a practice, earn enough money to buy a down payment on a house. And through the planning process with us, this client started out originally with his father, who referred me to the son. He also, the son, instilled that in his children in terms of education. He paid for their education. He paid for their bar mitzvah. He paid for the weddings for his daughters and his son. But they all became savers. So with that education, they all pursued different employment. But they all began to save at the personal level, save within their jobs with the company. So part of this is this process of education that you're talking about. But what about, do you ever run into difficulties that you see because of the wealth that the child grew up in? Neighborhood, cars, schools, and things like that, that perhaps they take that wealth for granted and they don't realize the hard work, the savings, and the thought process that went into, as well as the work, to creating that wealth.
Absolutely. I think that's the most common problem that we run into. As we work with clients and they pass away, working with the surviving heirs after the surviving spouse has passed away. So after both parents are gone, the biggest part of what we have to do is educate them, to teach them the idea of not going out and just blowing the money, but the importance of saving, the importance of growing money for their own goals, their own aspirations. And so for us, it's a conversation to try and help change their mindset about what they're focused on, help them identify what is important to them in life, and then putting together a financial plan to help achieve those goals and get them now looking not just at their immediate needs or wants, but for future wants and needs, and not just for them, but maybe for their kids. So there's been times where a child has received an inheritance from their parents, but then things like college education is very important. So then we may look at something like a 529 plan for future planning needs for the next generation. That's just one example of the type of things that we'll do.
Now, we've been talking about some of the difficulty of why wealth has not made it beyond the second generation. Let's put this in another perspective. What are families who are successful with wealth transfer over multiple generations? What are they doing differently than those that, let's say, have not made it beyond the second generation? So what are the things they are doing that make it successful?
So the families that have had wealth that have passed multiple generations, the Kennedys are a great example of this. There's really five tenets that they've focused on. The first one is they very clearly are able to communicate to the family the values and purposes of the money. What this does is helps create a common bond and ideology. So if everyone's on the same page, it makes communication much more effective. The second thing that they will do is set expectations and define the rationale of those expectations. So for example, what a lot of these families will do is have a annual meeting, family governance meeting. Oftentimes that's going to involve CPAs, financial planners, attorneys as well, really just kind of a state of the family meeting. And within that, there's an expectation put upon the kids to be prepared and to be involved. And one form that we saw this with one client was each of the children were expected to come with ideas on which charities to give to. These were teenagers, so they weren't even in college yet, but they were set up with the goal each year of how to give the money to charity each year. The parents defined how much went to charity, but it was up to the kids to do the due diligence to vet out the charities. The third thing that we're seeing is really something we've already talked about, but teaching the kids the correct behaviors to go after and create their own wealth, not just rely on the family's wealth. And the easiest way that they do this is through creating accountability and educating with intent. So when they make decisions, explain to the kids the rationale behind the decision and really encouraging them to be accountable to make progress towards those goals.
What are some of the tips that you have found have been helpful that, let's say, a wealthy parent could use in communicating with other family members?
Some of the basic tips here, I think number one is trying to find what I would call the Goldilocks level of communication. As I've said before, you don't want to give too much information. We're not trying to dump on our kids and stress them out or burden them, because a lot of times they're not prepared to receive that information. But you also don't want to give them too much, saying, when I pass, you're getting $1 million each. Done. It's somewhere in between. And when we communicate to them, we want to communicate effectively. What we found through research is the best way to do that is using what I would call with language. The with language here is trying to set up a high level of support for the kid while the parent's still trying to maintain control. A good example of this would be the example I talked about earlier, where the high schoolers were included in the annual meeting and they had the responsibility of figuring out which charities to donate to. Out of those three kids, one of them, the youngest son, didn't participate the first 2 years, so he didn't get to choose where any of the donations went. In the third year, he was actually very disturbed by this, so he went out and he did all sorts of research. He, on top of just doing research on which things to do, he actually spoke with people that were on the boards for these charities. And after that meeting, because of his efforts, they actually decided to include the caveat that going forward, that someone had to speak with someone on the board of directors to make sure that there was good governance within the charity. So it took him a little while to come to the table, but when he came, when he was ready, and because they had set the expectations and they were clear on it and he was held accountable each year, it helped position him for success.
So you talk about language. You know, obviously there's a difference between one generation, let's say the greatest generation, the boomers, now the boomers and Gen Xers or millennials. When you talk about language, you have to use words that communicate effectively. And as you pointed out, where in one case, one client just said, you know, here's a spreadsheet. This is what I own. This is my assets. You know, son, you get half of this. Daughter, you get the other half. You've been talking about, you know, commonality, the importance of self-reliance, giving. How do you communicate that in terms of words that they can relate to? Sometimes you've seen parents, I know of one successful case, where the child never had to work, But basically, after eighth grade, the parent came in and said, you know what? You live in a nice home. You have a lot of the things given to you, but it's important for you to learn the value of work and savings. And so after the child got out of eighth grade, that child was required to get a job. So through their high school years, they were working. And when it came to getting a car, even though the parents could have bought a car easily, the child had to come up with the savings for the down payment to get the car. So here was work experience, teaching the child the importance of work, teaching the child the importance of savings, and teaching the child that, look, if you got a goal, you know, what kid in high school doesn't want to have a car? So having a car was a goal, but also to get that car, that child had to work, that child had to save. And it was a very important lesson that made that child very successful going on and becoming very successful in a business career.
Yeah, absolutely. The style of communication we use for our kids, what we find, unfortunately, is most parents use what I would call to or for language. I am going to do this to you. This is what we are going to do. So the parent makes the decision, very authoritarian in style, and they dictate those instructions to the kids. What that does is that leaves the kids alienated from the process. They don't feel involved, and it can help stunt their growth. We had one example where we had a client meeting each year with his family, so doing the right activities, but the problem was he didn't involve anyone else in the process. He didn't even involve his spouse. The meeting was an hour of him telling everybody else what he's doing, in turn, what that means, what the family is doing. And it wasn't until his passing that the kids began to be able to come to the meetings each year with ideas. In fact, one of the daughters communicated to me that she appreciated the idea of the meetings, but she didn't see value in it until her father had passed away, where now her and her siblings could come to the table with ideas and be an active participant in the process. So it's important to not just dictate terms, but to, again, we want to come along and use with language to help support. What we're finding a lot of other parents are doing, especially those that are in the well-off category, is they're enabling their kids by doing everything for our kids. And that's the big argument or the big rub against the millennial generation, is this sense of entitlement. And unfortunately, that comes from this parenting style where everything is done for the kid, so the kid isn't able to do anything on their own. They're not given the ability to fail, to learn from their mistakes. So this creates an environment where the kids are somewhat set up for failure because they expect everything to be done for them, so they're going to rely on the family's wealth instead of relying on creating their own wealth.
Do you have any examples that you're able to illustrate for our listeners where this value was instilled into the kids and it made a difference?
Yeah, so there's a couple examples that we're able to come up with. One was we had a business owner who was very successful, and he developed his business and he was traveling a lot with the work. As work began to settle down, his kids were in their teenage years, he really wanted to focus on getting the kids groomed. And he didn't want them to feel pressure to take over the family business, but he wanted to give them the opportunity to take over the family business. So what he did in high school, similar to what you had talked about earlier, Jim, was he required the kids to work each summer, whether it was at the business or somewhere else of their choice, did not matter, but through their summer in high school and through college, they had to work somewhere. Now, he paid for their college to make sure that they were able to attend and make sure that they were taken care of. But upon graduation, two out of the three sons wanted to jump right into the family business. He actually told them no. What he told them is he wanted, just like any other employee, they needed to have work experience to come work for him. So they had to go get other jobs. One kid worked for one of the big four accounting firms. Another kid was an engineer. He worked at a smaller firm, and they worked at those respective career paths for 3, 5, 7 years before deciding to come and join the family business. So what the dad had done was create a valuable work ethic, help teach them the right values, and then required them to go out and try things on their own. If they want to do the family business, that's fine. They had that option down the road if they met the right hurdles. So it was a way to encourage them, but still make sure that the family's wealth was protected in the meantime. Another story that we had was kid wanted to go to college, but the kid wanted to get a degree in liberal arts and wanted to go to USC, where it was going to cost them $60,000 a year to be a teacher, where they're expected to earn $35,000 a year. And the parent was concerned because the child had no concept of money, no concept of what it was. So what he had done is he said, whatever your career is that you want to go or whatever you want to be, that's fine. I will pay for any college as long as the average salary for that profession matches the annual tuition.
Wow.
So that way you're essentially earning that salary while going to school. So the child ended up going to UC Berkeley, which is still a great school, instead of UCLA, because that matched what she wanted to do. So she had the choice of either changing her career to something that's going to make more money to attend the university she wants, or what the father felt was the better decision was to choose a different school that's going to allow her to do and pursue her passion, but help teach her that value of money in the meantime.
Are there any professionals, Paul, that can help a wealthy family go through this process, whether it's communicating, educating, in handling this in a way that instills confidence, values, and success?
Yeah, absolutely. Jim, there are like the couple that you have interviewed in the past where they work specifically with wealthy families to help them develop family governance. Perhaps the most vital cog in this is having a good financial planner, because that can be very beneficial throughout the process. The financial planner can often serve as a neutral third party that can help educate the kids, and they can help facilitate the conversations. Sometimes having just a neutral third party makes all the family members feel a little bit more comfortable. And having the financial planner or CPA or attorney involved, ideally all three, having them involved in the annual meeting can help, again, facilitate better communication to help make it a better process.
Well, Paul, as we close, if our listeners would like to get in contact with you, whether it's financial planning or this process of helping pass on wealth to the next generation, how could they do so, please?
Yeah, absolutely. If they have any questions or would like to learn more about this, please contact me at PFS Group at 888-486-3939. Again, that's 888-486-3939. Or I could be reached by my email, which is paul@paplava.com.
Well, listen, Paul, thanks for joining us on the program. All the best. Come back and talk to us again.
Thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure.
You know, it's absolutely amazing. I've been doing financial planning, gosh, now for over 35 years. And it's one of the things I've seen is the difference between generations, what happens with wealth. And as we started this program, we talked about, in many cases, the wealth doesn't make it beyond the second generation. America has more billionaires and millionaires than any other country in the world. And yet when you see this, a lot of this wealth never passes on. So hope this is helpful. If you're in a situation, maybe you've been very successful in the business, you want that to continue with your kids, or you have a tremendous amount of wealth and you would like to see that wealth be purpose-driven for your own children, there are many things out there that you can use, but hope you found this helpful. Because it is a shame, with so much wealth, it doesn't make it beyond the second generation. I'm Jim Paplava. Thanks for listening.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSM. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense, or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.